had we recorded a couple days ago, the season already would have been over, and in the non-real baseball town that we have been told we live in by...
Numerous by outputs. Yeah.
The columnist. Would have been a real bummer had the season been over at 0-2. But instead, 3 days later, including a Sunday off day, which somebody said was the first Sunday off day in the history of the franchise...
That's not true. They had a couple of off days on Sunday in like January.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. I think he meant in the season, like during the season.
Oh, that makes more sense. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But it's possible not. I guess it could be any off day. Maybe they just nobody takes days off.
Well, the reason why there was an off day is because Denver is such a non-baseball town.
Yeah, exactly.
And they figured Sundays are for the Broncos. Yeah.
Yeah, Broncoa.
Broncoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why there was an off day on Sunday. Out of reverence for John Elway, I'm sure.
Yeah, probably. It was his birthday, from what I heard.
It was his birthday. Yeah.
So, happy birthday to the king. And with that, we welcome you in to this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I am Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And it is episode number 127 as your, my, and our Colorado Rockies get the regular season underway. It's the first podcast of the 2018 regular season. Matt Hansen, our good pal on Rockies Twitter, pointed out that apparently every season since we started the PDP, we have done like one or two fewer episodes than the season before.
Yes, yeah.
But last year... I don't remember. We screwed it up somehow. Last year, we did more episodes. So Matt's theory, last year we did more than we did in 2016. So Matt's theory is that we won't be seeing the Rockies win more games than what they did last year. So you can
it was an inverse correlation.
Yeah.
It was more PDP episode mean fewer wins and vice versa.
Yeah. Yeah. Which makes sense,
Sure.
Like last year when we made a joke about – no, that was a couple years ago now. We made a joke about Tim Tebow, and a woman on Twitter said that's why the Rockies went on a losing streak, because we were disrespecting Tebow.
Yes. And Trump, too, I think, at some point.
Yeah,
And the Rockies lost like 3 or 4 or something.
Yeah. And then I think like Nolan's cycle almost immediately followed that, and that lady shockingly was nowhere to be heard from after that, which was a big surprise.
Russian bots are going to Russian bot.
They are, and unfortunately, they have discovered Rocky's Twitter. I pity the poor Russian bastard who comes across Rocky's Twitter, like sitting in his troll farm somewhere in St. Petersburg, and he comes across Rocky's Twitter, and people just annihilate him on the internet.
And he has to figure out what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, what he's trying to be angry about.
Because the jokes about your president, they do not make things good for your baseball team.
Like, I don't like Coors.
Not good with the Coors.
Coors, more vodka. No
Coors. The Levi's jeans, the chocolate bars, none of them good.
It's funny, when he talks about Levi's, putting an S there is actually accurate.
Yeah, taco apostrophe S.
Levi apostrophe S.
Actually, isn't there something about Levi's where something in the logo? Oh no, that was the. Never mind, it's a whole different thing. Doesn't have to do with the apostrophe. Now I don't want to get into
Illuminati stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, basically, it's like the. Yeah. It's like the the creepy all-seeing eye inside the pyramid. Something about how it's watching us. Anyway, none of this has anything to do with anything.
Anyway, so the Rockies
2-2 through 4 games, and your Colorado Rockies, as of right now, are a team with a lot of encouraging signs, and that's fun. Ian Desmond is probably the front runner for National League MVP right now. I would say they might do away with the American League MVP and just give one MVP, and it'll be Ian Desmond. It'll be the Ian Desmond Award.
Yeah, they'll rename it after him this year.
Yeah. Which I think would be pretty cool, to be honest.
That makes more sense.
It's give credit where it's due, people. That's what I say.
Yeah. And that credit all belongs to Ian Desmond.
It does so far. So let's dive in. The Rockies, as of today, will head into the second game of a series with the, can we say, woeful San Diego Padres. They are just
woebegone.
The woebegone San Diego Padres. The Padres are winless. And I don't know, that team, like,
They're going to be better soon.
They're
going to
be better.
They're
going to be better than 2017, but, man, they don't look good yet. This is a four-game series at Petco this week, and so it kind of, you know, Petco, where the pets go, it's a house of horrors traditionally for the Rockies. Even though what's weird is, like, you remember, like, a lot of good moments in Petco Park, but traditionally the Rockies have not played well in Petco Park. They'll go at it again tonight. With the Padres in game two of that four-game series in a matchup in which the Rockies will send Kyle Freeland to the mound for the first time this year against Tyson Ross. And in perfectly 2018 Padres fashion, the Padres broadcast yesterday, the studio guys were saying, it looks like Tyson Ross is going to go tomorrow. And I'm like, man, it is the fifth game of the season for this team. I mean, and they're already like, well, not sure about that number five spot.
Well, with Tyson Ross, I mean, he's always got a lot of question marks
around
him.
He's made out of a fragile cracker. Type of matzah, I think, that comprises Tyson Ross's joints.
The Padres have some nice position player prospects coming up. They got a couple of pitchers as well, Cal Quantrill, Mackenzie Gore eventually. But their starting rotation is Clayton Richard, something named Joey Lucchese, Luis Perdomo, Brian Mitchell, and then the ghost of Tyson Ross.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not.
That's not great, Bob.
It's not a loaded roster there right now. And it's weird seeing Eric Hosmer. Like, you signed on the dotted line to join this team? Like, I get it, you know, starting in 2019.
In 8 years, they could be all right.
Yeah, in 8 years, Eric Hosmer could be terrible also. That's a possibility. But the Padres, you know, you start off last night, you get a win, you put together some good offensive performances throughout the lineup, and let's start there. Let's start with the offense first, because the offense has yet to play a game at hashtag Coors and is leading all of Major League Baseball in home runs hit as a team. The Rockies have 10 home runs as an offense so far. The Washington Nationals, 9. That is the second place team in the National League. Rockies as an offense are hitting .266 as a team with a .327 on base percentage and a .525 slugging percentage. That slugging percentage mark is by far the best for an offense in the National League. And none of that has come at Coors Field. That being said, as has been well documented and dived into several times at purpleroad.com, I know Jeff Aberle was kind of the first one to really put this thought process out there. It isn't that Coors Field hampers the Rockies in winning on the road. It's the continual transition back and forth from Coors Field to going on the road. That's what hampers the Rockies winning on the road. So you're almost kind of happy if you can start with 7 away from Coors Field and come away with 4 or 5 wins. That's a hell of a good place for you to start, because you're not starting behind the eight ball with a bunch of road trips coming up after leaving Coors Field. And the reasoning behind that is, you get to Coors Field, you get used to pitches breaking a certain way, you play an 8-game homestand, let's say, over, you know, the span of 9 days, even an 8-game homestand, and you see pitches do certain things at a much more mild degree than what they would do at sea level or on the road. And then you go on the road, and all of a sudden everything is breaking 10% more than what you expect. That, in large part, is why the Rockies tend to struggle so bad on the road, because they're constantly having to make that adjustment. Every other team, you come in for a few days, you leave, and everywhere else plays normal. But the Rockies, for 81 games a year, are playing in a different offensive environment. So starting off on the road, if you can come away with a series win in San Diego and get home at 4-3 to kick things off for the home schedule, you feel pretty great about yourselves.
Especially when it might be raining and snowing on Friday in Coors Field, apparently. That sounds like mid-April in Denver.
All these people the last few weeks are like, oh, you going opening day? You going opening day? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. Not realizing I leave town Thursday for a DU trip that I just did not think about at all. It was like 2 weeks ago that I was like, man, I can't go to opening day. I'm not even going to be here. So dumb. Idiot. We talked about this last week, because the Phillies have a home game on Thursday, the night that I get in, but I'm working for MILB that night, and then they're off on Friday before playing Saturday and Sunday. I get the weather days, but, like, come on.
Come on.
Yeah, Friday looks like it's going to be miserable. Anyway, your point.
So that'll be fun. But the good thing that we're seeing from this Rockies offense so far, we're seeing some power from some unlikely places. DJ LeMahieu has hit a pair of bombs. Ian Desmond has hit a pair of bombs. Chuck is leading all players with 4 homers. Like, it's been fun so far to watch these guys start to hit.
Yeah, they are really top to bottom right now, looking very good offensively. Trevor Story has struggled. He's 2 for his first 16 with 7 strikeouts, so that beat continues to roll on. Gerardo Parra, though, 3 of 16, but one of his hits is a home run. He's driven in 6. Everybody else, though, up and down the order. Carlos Gonzalez is like the one. Cargo and Nolan are like the ones that are like kind of struggling compared to everybody else. Cargo's batting 294, 333, 353. Nolan's batting 267, 333, 533. He's got a homer as well, just like everybody. And it's, yeah, Arizona's an offensively friendly park, but last night they looked terrific in San Diego, which is like where bats go to die.
I mean, they were hitting bombs.
Yeah.
And those late inning home runs that Chuck and DJ had back to back, those are two of the hardest balls we're going to see those guys hit all season long, simply because of the fact where it was, when it was. It was April 2nd. It was the 8th inning of a game. It was, you know, around 10 o'clock local time, early April in San Diego. The Marine layer is at its hardest. It's going to be pretty much all season. It's going to be, at that time, really tough to get a ball out of the ballpark at Petco Park. And Chuck hit that one off a lefty to dead center field and cleared the fence by 20 feet. DJ did the same thing to left center. Those are shots, man. I don't care if the balls are juiced. I don't care if, you know, Mark McGrath was throwing 85 miles an hour, wherever guy's name was. That's a shot to get it out of that ballpark at that time.
Sugar Ray lead singer, Mark McGrath. I think that's what that guy's name was.
I think so.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a cheap home run at Petco Park at all. And for them to do it that way last night, I mean, they go out and they bang out a 7-4 win, and it was just good quality baseball throughout. I mean, it was like a really well-played game throughout by the Rockies. And, you know, you kind of early on get a little bit worried because Chad Bettis, is he going to have the command, you know, serving up some stuff early on, and then he reins it in, ends up going 5 pretty solid innings. He did walk 4, but he struck out 4, 2 runs on 5 hits over 5 innings. Just, you know, throughout the order, with the exception of Nolan, everybody 1 through 7 had at least one hit. Chris Iannetta goes out, goes 0 for 4. He's still hitting 455 to start the year because he started off 5 of 7. Chad Bettis even had a hit yesterday. Like, they just put together, it was a very well-rounded offensive performance. Yeah. And yes, game number 1 of the season, they score 2 runs. Game number 3 of the season, they score 2 runs. You split those games, you're pretty damn happy with that. The outlier is a 1-run loss. The 9-8 game on the 2nd day of the season at Arizona. They fought back in that game. They tied things up with that 5-run inning, and then they end up falling late in that game. So, I mean, you're a 500 team through 4 games. And, again, it's the first podcast of the regular season. We're going to overanalyze as much as possible through 4 games.
Yes, that's the plan. Yeah, we're going to make broad, sweeping statements about 4 games worth of data. Yes,
and
that is our job.
In true PDP fashion, we're going to, you know, we know how used everybody is to the hot take machine that is the Denver sports media. And so our hottest take is, I think they look fine through 4 games.
Yeah, I think they're right.
You know,
look at DJ LeMahieu, though, with a couple of bombs and 4 walks.
Yeah.
Like, that's fun so far in the early going. Fun with small sample sizes.
Yeah. They're all good. They're all good sample sizes.
But, you know, hashtag Coors. So
everywhere. The Rockies, as a team, have 73 total bases through 4 games, which is quite fun. But yeah, this is an encouraging number. They, as a team, have walked 13 times against 37 strikeouts. It's not the greatest number in the world, but it shows that guys are figuring out ways. DJ has walked 4 times. That's a team high, but Nolan's got a couple of walks. Chuck has a couple of walks. Iannetta has taken a couple of walks, which, you know, he's going to do all season long. Even Gerardo Parra took a walk yesterday.
Yeah, what the hell?
That was strange. Trevor Story's got a walk compared to his 7 strikeouts. You know, they just, like, they're doing a lot of good things so far offensively. Here's the weird thing. They, as a staff, have a 5.56 team ERA. Basically, all of that is from the starters. Tyler Anderson, yes, who was horrendous, 2 1/3, 5 hits, 7 runs, all earned, 4 walks, 3 strikeouts. John Gray, who ran into trouble early and then settled in somewhat over the middle stretch of his 4 innings, 6 hits, 3 runs, 4 strikeouts, 3 walks. John Gray's going to be fine. We say that every year. Germán Márquez was fantastic. Other than those two, like, you've gotten pretty quality outings. Chad Bettis yesterday was fine. Today we'll see Kyle Freeland for the first time, so we'll see how that goes. But the bullpen is where things really stand. And that I'm going to turn over to you because you got the numbers and all that stuff. But that's been as impressive as you would hope early on.
Yeah, you definitely worry about the bullpen and the starting rotation not going very deep into games. That is a problem we have with the Colorado Rockies every single year, and that's never going to change. You know, guys can't go deep into games. The bullpen gets worn out early, and they falter in the middle of the summer, and that's where we get those June, July, August swoons or whatever the Rockies always do every single season. But this year, the team is still not going deep into games. The rotation is still has not pitched very long in the game. In fact, the longest outing by a starter is only five innings done by both Marquez and Bettis the last two games. But this bullpen right now is showing what they're made of and showing that it was money well spent by Jeff Breidich and the Monfords in the offseason, because the combination right now of Brian Shaw, Jake McGee, Adam Ottavino, and Wade Davis, they have combined to throw 10 and a third scoreless innings. They've allowed just two hits in that time, both by Brian Shaw. 15 strikeouts compared to just two walks in that time. 15 strikeouts to two walks between those four guys who are going to be your late inning relievers pretty much all season long.
Yeah. The thing that stands out is it's two sides of a coin for that, and you mentioned it a minute ago. You get a little bit worried because nobody's going deep into games in the early going from the starting pitching staff, and yes, again, it's four games. But on the other side of that coin, you don't want to burn these guys out, and the reason why you signed them is so you have depth and you don't have to overly rely on one guy. Greg Holland was run into the ground by June last year.
Yeah, and it showed.
And it showed. The second half was not great for Greg Holland. That's why you have these options late in games. That's why you can go to Brian Shaw, former Nuggets coach. Adam Ottavino has been unbelievable so far. That's why you have a resurgent Adam Ottavino. That's why you have Jake McGee. That's why you have Mike Dunn. And more importantly than all of them right now, that's why you have Wade Davis. And you're not going to have to go to Wade Davis for a lot of five-out appearances because you've got other guys you trust to get the ball to him for the ninth inning and lock things down that way. Last night, that was really the game that the Rockies want to play all year.
It was by the books how you want to win.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You would like to see your starter go through six and, if possible, seven.
Sure.
But Chad Bettis gives up two runs, one in the first, one in the third, and then hands off a game that was in the bag until those two runs late by the Padres and still was in the bag. I mean, Wade Davis comes on, has to record one out to get the save. But Adam Ottavino, scoreless inning, perfect inning, two strikeouts. Brian Shaw, scoreless inning, one hit. Jake McGee, scoreless inning, two strikeouts. Chris Russin struggled in the ninth. That's all. Chris Russin hasn't been super sharp out of the gate. Chris Russin, though, you don't need him to be super sharp when he's coming in and with a five-run lead gets you two outs in the ninth. Obviously you would like him to go out and throw a perfect inning, but you're not relying on Chris Russin to be that shutdown guy. So that's the whole point of having all these guys. So yes, I do understand a little bit of the trepidation of like, well, you know, they're just not getting a whole lot out of the starters early. You don't want to run into a situation where you're using these guys every single day. Yeah, it's true. That's also why you have four, five, six of those guys rather than one, maybe two, like we've seen in franchise history.
Oh, and Brian Shaw, he's used to pitching a lot. You know, Tito Francona tried to run him in the ground as much as he could, and Brian Shaw was still effective no matter how many times Tito called the bullpen. He led the league in appearances over the last four seasons, and it really isn't that close with the next closest guy. You know, he pitched in pretty much half the games for the Indians each of the last 4 years. That's how much Tito relied on Brian Shaw. So he's able to come out every day, every other day, or whatever, and give you some good innings. Jake McGee has looked fantastic so far. He's got three perfect innings to his ledger, four strikeouts in that way. Wade Davis only had to make two appearances so far, spending an inning and a third. He has been perfect so far with a couple of strikeouts. But Adam Ottavino is the difference maker, in my opinion. You know that Shaw is going to give you what he gives you. Last night he came out, threw 15 pitches, all cutters. That is what he does. Wade Davis got his out. You know Jake McGee is, you know, spinning a little curveball here, and that's great. But he has been as advertised and what they're paying for. The difference maker could be Adam Ottavino. Now, we've seen him so far been absolutely fantastic and looking like pre-Tommy John surgery Adam Ottavino. You remember that that first month or whatever before he got hurt back in, what was that, 2015, where he made 10 appearances, He struck out 13 batters. He walked 2 in 10 and a third innings, did not give up a run. Then he got hurt and really has not been the same guy since. He had an okay year in 2016 after he came back, but really has not been the same guy. Had a really, really tough year last season. Adam Ottavino right now looks better than he did in that cameo in 2015 before he got hurt. Three innings, no hits, no runs, one walk, 8 strikeouts in 3 innings. He is among the league leaders in strikeouts right now overall, and he's a reliever. And we're talking about 4 games of the season, I know, but still, that is how good he has been. His slider has been unbelievable. His fastball has been as advertised. If he is that guy, you know what you're getting from Shaw.
Yeah.
You know you're getting from Davis. You know what you're getting from McGee. If you have a fourth dominant guy in the back end of that bullpen, that's something that a lot of teams can't claim.
Yeah.
And that's not even mentioning guys like Scott Oberg, who has been, you know, has shown flashes of being great. You know, Russin, who is able to throw guys off balance. I mean, Mike Dunn is your, got a 5-run lead, warm up, get a few outs in the 9th guy. You're paying him, you know, $8 million or whatever this year.
Yeah.
This has, I know it's early, obviously, but this has the makings based on pedigree, based on stuff of, sure, by far the best bullpen the Rockies have ever had, but arguably one of the best bullpens in the National League. And I said this last night on Twitter after Kenley Jansen blew up another game for the Dodgers. He looks like he's hurt. Wade Davis is the best closer in the National League West right now.
I'm good with that. Somebody bring back Fernando Rodney. I miss watching him be bad.
I mean, it's hyperbole, sure, and that's what's going to get retweets, and that's what's going to get hot takes and all that crap. But there's real reason why people think, or why you can think that the Rockies could have one of the better bullpens in the National League this year, and you don't got to be smoking that 420, that mile high.
And by the way, you've got a guy in Antonio Senzatella who I think is going to continue his evolution as a reliever. Senzatella, we talked all last season about how his mix works best in a relief role. He's got a power fastball. He's got good off-speed stuff, but he's really a two-pitch guy. If you can continue to take steps forward with him right now, put him in lower leverage situations. He wasn't great his first time out. He's still, what is Antonio, 23 years old, I think.
He's 11 years old.
Yeah, basically. So that is another arm that I think as you get deeper and deeper into the season, you're going to be able to rely on for more and more high leverage work. And beyond that, you've still got a guy like Carlos Estevez. We're not sure when he's going to be back. A left oblique strain. He was placed on the 10-day DL on March 29th, which was retroactive to the 26th. But he's scheduled to throw a sim game today, actually. And you get somebody like that back. Carlos Estevez has not been a consistently great arm out of the bullpen. But if Carlos Estevez can establish consistency, he gives you the potential for a really, really electric arm out of the bullpen. He's a guy who touches triple digits. He's 25 years old as well. So you've got depth beyond all this. The closest parallel that I can come to for the Rockies, that 95 team, and that was a strike shortened year. So that wasn't even a 162 game season. That 95 team made the playoffs based on its bullpen. That was the year that, you know, Curtis Laskanik, who by the way turned 50 years old the other day. I can't even explain to you how that makes me feel that Curtis Laskanik is 50 years old. But when you look up and down that relief corps, Darren Holmes that year, 3.24 ERA in 68 games. Laskanik, 3.40 ERA in 76 games. Roger Bailey was a pretty effective option. He pitched in 39 games, an ERA under 5, which in 1995 Coors Field was like superhuman work. Curtis Laskanik was the guy who got you set up all the time. The other guy who got you set up all the time was Steve Reed. 71 games, a 2.14 ERA for Steve Reed. That team constantly was going to that group of guys, though, and by the end of the season they were very weighed down. You look at everybody else on that roster. Bruce Ruffin had 37 appearances. Lance Painter had 33 appearances. Nobody else had more than 21 beyond those 5 guys, and really it was 4 guys, because Holmes pitched in 68 games, Laskanik was in 76. Steve Reed was in 71. The one guy that I didn't mention was Mike Munoz, who pitched in 64 games, but also didn't have great numbers. But when you rely consistently on just a core group of guys, the risk you run is that by August, September, October, you have worn those guys down to the nub. You can't get into a situation where you find yourself like that. But what's encouraging about the Rockies is you have all these other options. And not only do you have guys like Carlos Estevez, who's going to, you know, hopefully come back healthy, but Scott Oberg, continued evolution. Antonio Senzatella, continued evolution. You've also got guys. Jairo Diaz is down in AAA. So you've got an option of somebody like that potentially to come back up. I think the depth is what has separated this year's Rockies and last year's Rockies from previous Rockies teams. We talked about it a lot in 2017. Depth is so huge for this team in this city because you're not going to be able to recover as quickly, injuries and altitude and the way the oxygen,
yada, yada,
blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You have to have that, though. And that is, to me, what Jeff Bridges has done best is he's built depth in every single spot on the roster, every single spot in the system. And that's been really impressive.
And the best part is that we went to the offseason, we saw what Jeff Bridges did, how he went about trying to reform this roster. And he focused on the bullpen first. And the early returns, he gets one of these. My thumb is up. It's a thumbs up.
I was wondering what it
was. He gets a thumbs up. You can't see on a podcast. That is, you know, got to be very heartening for the whole team. I mean, they're seeing what this team was trying to do, what they were trying to accomplish, how they went to go try to improve their roster in the offseason. And you get back and the guys come out just firing BBs out of the gate. I mean, that's got to give you confidence because the starting pitching staff, I mean, this is a rotation that is among the youngest in all of baseball. And if they know every day that they can go in and, you know, not have to pitch seven innings, not have to go 6 2/3, you know, they can go five innings if need be, and have confidence in the bullpen, they can take it the rest of the way. Starting pitchers for the Rockies haven't really had that kind of confidence ever in their entire history. So I think that's only going to help a young team the way the Rockies have constructed it right now, but it also helps when some of the guys who had rough years last year have turned it around in the early going, like Ian Desmond. That is a great sign as well, because, you know, as well as you can pitch for a Rockies team, you're going to need some guys to score some runs, and it's a two-way street. And it's really glad that we're seeing a lot of great things from both sides right now for the Rocks.
It's been fun the first few days. Yeah, it was frustrating on day one and day two. But, you know, it's you come home from this road trip at 4-3. I think you feel really good about where you are to start the season, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. There's not a whole lot to talk about, I guess, in the early going. But hey, we put out a call for your Ask PDP questions. And let's get to some. What I very much enjoy about the Colorado Rockies fan base that follows us on Rockies Twitter is that you put out a nice little call at like 1:15 on a Tuesday afternoon. We got like 20 questions instantly in on the old Ask PDP line. So you're not even pretending to work today, you people.
No.
It's
a Tuesday, guys.
Yeah, it's Tuesday. This isn't like a Friday podcast recording. Like, you're all extraordinarily lazy. So let's get started. One from our buddy John Asbury, who's been a longtime PDP follower and a journalist himself out on Long Island for New York Newsday, the Long Island.
We learn a lot about Long Island politics from following John Asbury.
Following John. And if you would like to know the same, follow John as well. He's a Denver guy, a Colorado guy, but is out there now. And he tweets in, quote, "Is Ian Desmond good now?" Apparently that's a conversation that we'd like have to have.
I mean, is Ian Desmond good? I mean, I think he's better than last year. But also, I have been on record. I've been on record saying all offseason that Ian Desmond's going to have a much, much better year.
Yeah,
I know
that's
not
about
saying
that
a lot,
lot.
But I think he's going to have a more Ian Desmond type season. I mean,
yeah,
you know, the OPS is going to be near 800. I think he's going to hit 20 bombs. You know, he can steal you 15-20 bags now still if he needs to. You know, I think he's going to have a much, much better season. Early returns, A-okay. I think he's going to be at, like, similar to what Gerardo Parra was in the second year of his big contract after having such a tough first year of that contract. I'm on record saying that.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah.
I think Ian Desmond is good now.
My worry about Ian Desmond is the ground ball rate last year was so laughably bad at 62.7%. And last night he had a very good game, and we're all very high on Ian Desmond this morning. Ground ball rate is 61.5%. Yes, it's four games.
Still not great.
Still not great. Still something you could try to improve on there, Ian Desmond. But, you know, it's
so bizarre, like, last year that, you know, he had the 63% ground ball rate, which led the league. He also has batting average and balls in play of .345,
which
is really
good.
What
in God's name? How the hell is that even? Well, it's because of all those infield singles. He hustled to beat out 59 infield singles, I think, last year.
Pretty much, I think, yeah. Of his 93 hits, 55 were infield singles. Billy Hamilton, yeah.
Moon Dancer Fuca, and I don't – I'm sure I pronounced the last word of that wrong. But in all caps, very excitable. Will Ian Desmond hit 400 and go 40-40 because it seems like that's possible right now? I would say undoubtedly yes. I don't think there's anything
50-50, I think,
to say that he won't, you know, at this stage. More than likely.
Do you remember when Matt Kemp almost went 40-40 that one year, and then next year he came out in spring training and said, I'm going for 50-50, guys.
Oh, Matt Kemp.
That was the year he should have won the MVP, and he lost it to Braun.
Yeah. Yeah, Ryan Braun kind of made a nice little cottage industry out of robbing people of awards they should have won.
And
God, Matt Kemp's numbers that year were insane.
And of people's dignity?
Yeah. 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 Yeah, remember that when he got
a
guy fired?
Ryan Braun did a really good job at that. When he got a guy fired.
He got a
lab. And he called him an anti-Semite or something?
Yeah. He like suggested that the guy was trying to get him in trouble for doping because he was anti-Semitic, and got the guy fired from his job because of a chain of custody issue with a sample that Ryan Braun provided that tested positive. And then later on, Ryan Braun tested positive anyway. Remember that? Remember that, everybody who's tuned in?
Yep.
Those 2011 numbers for Matt Kemp. 161 games he played that year. And you got to think to yourself, like, oh, man, Matt Kemp, he really broke down for a while. Matt Kemp has played 150 or more games in 7 seasons of his 13 years in the big leagues.
Yeah, he just got fat.
Goodness gracious.
But he's lost weight now. He's back.
Yeah,
he's,
he looks fine. You know, Matt Kemp is 33. Like, how is that possible? Matt Kemp and I graduated high school the same year. He's a little bit older than me, but God, that makes me feel so weird. Matt Kemp, anyway.
And against the Rockies, that's, yeah, go ahead.
2011, 324, 399, 586, 39 homers, 126 RBIs, 40 stolen bases. He also walked 74 times that year, which is like by far a career high. His OPS plus that season was 172. What?
Yeesh.
Good God. Matt Kemp was really good for a minute.
I will say that, his numbers against the Rockies that year, hit .329 with 6 homers, 19 runs batted in 18 games. That is very unsurprising.
Quite good.
He did strike out. He struck out 19 times in 18 games, though, so good for the Rockies, I guess.
Yeah. We got a tweet in from @drunk_dinger who said, quote, please discuss on your next digital radio program. Evidently, if you Google, let me see if this comes up the same for me. Dinger mascot. Yeah, the first thing that comes up if you Google Dinger mascot is one of those suggested boxes from Google, but the line in it is, quote, Dinger, the Colorado Rockies mascot, stands for the national anthem before the game. Now, here's my thing.
What a weird fact to put in the top of Dinger's bio.
Here's my thing, and I have clicked on the link below. I have not yet opened it, but this is my thought process of what exactly, because you immediately read that and you think, like, what the hell? Is this like some article about, like, oh, man, don't take a knee, my ass. I'm staying for the anthem.
I won't take a knee.
I won't take a knee. My thought is that's actually the caption to a photo in the article that's linked. And now we're going to click on the link.
Right.
And... Hang on. There's actually a 17 photo slideshow that I have to click through now.
Oh God.
Love
Bleacher Report.
And this is DenverPost.com. 11, 12. There's a picture of him at baggage claim. There's a picture of him dancing to a song by Opie Gone Bad.
Oh boy.
Yep. picture number 17. Quote, Dinger, the Colorado Rockies mascot, stands for the national anthem before the game. Colorado Rockies took on the San Diego Padres on the opening day at Coors Field in Denver, Colorado. Thank God. Because I really thought it was just like Kisla had gone off on like a, thank God, at least the mascot supports the country. One of those.
That wouldn't even be Kisla's thing,
though. No, I don't think it would. Kisla's actually very like logical about things like that, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, we solved that mystery. Thank God. But it led at drunk underscore Dinger to Photoshop a t-shirt onto Dinger that says, I stand for the national anthem, with a cartoon hand giving the finger with the flag superimposed on it. And I'm totally down with that. Totally down with that. Nicktastic at Nick the Walsh. Quote, does your podcast recording performance increase by rubbing yourselves down with Vaseline?
Oh yeah, this was something that came out today that it's gonna be pretty cold in Yankee Stadium today, where the Rays, they got snowed out yesterday. The Rays and Yankees trying to get the home opener in the Bronx today, and apparently came out that Kevin Kiermaier, who is seemingly just a terrific guy, seems to not have rabbit ears at all and doesn't block people on Twitter for no reason at all.
We're talking about cats.
Yeah, he apparently, in lieu of putting on like a nice long sweatshirt, decided to rub himself down with Vaseline, like covering his entire body to add an extra layer so he could keep warm while he was standing out there in center field. Yeah. Now, what I've never heard of doing that before. I don't know.
Yeah.
Is that a thing? If you put Vaseline all over your body, does it act like a protective shield?
Here's where I think that comes from. I think that, and like, I guess it's sort of a smart-ish concept, because you would think like it's not really anything that would be that easily penetrable. Like, it's a gross, gooey substance. I guess the wind theoretically would not get through something like that. But what I think it comes from is football players do it, linemen do it, and they do it under the auspices of, oh, it helps keep me warm. It doesn't help keep you warm. They're trying to get guys' hands to slide off of them so they can block easier. I think that's right, where it comes from. But people just took it as, oh man, that's great. It's going to help keep me warm. I don't know.
Yeah. For what it's worth, guess, he has come out and said that it was all fake news. And
did he actually say that?
Out of proportion. He might not have said those exact words, but he did. He did deny it.
I hope he does. I hope he is one of those people who's a fake news person.
This is the
fake news media blowing out of proportion. My Vaseline love. But to answer your question, yes, it does.
So he said, sorry to disappoint the blown out of proportion comment about me possibly applying Vaseline to help keep me warm tonight. Forgot to put it on.
Did he put an apostrophe after applying?
He did not. Oh. Have my two undershirts on already and going Vaseline free. Print that, folks.
Okay.
Anyway.
You know, not much gets printed these days, right, Kevin? You know, like, we're not really in a printing era of media. Anyway.
There was a time this offseason that went on way too long where so much of Rockies Twitter convinced themselves that Kevin Kiermaier would be the perfect guy to acquire for the Rockies in exchange for someone like Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah.
And I
what
never understood
God's
that
name?
One. I am not a big Kiermaier guy. Defensively, awesome, fantastic, one of the best. I don't like his offensive profile, personally.
Yeah.
I don't know, especially not for something like that.
I don't like the idea of giving Brendan Rodgers up for anything.
Yeah, at this point. That's why the offseason's way too long.
Yeah.
This is from a Mexican Rockies fan,
yes,
not a slur. That is what his
that's his Twitter name.
Title
his
is
Twitter handle is even better.
At doll underscore is my dad. love it so much. Best thing to eat in Coors. Now, this is one of my favorite things that I get in Coors. It's a relatively new thing because there was a place near Coors Field, still is, Biker Jim's, one of my favorite places in all of Denver. Been going there for years, and now that's kind of been blowing up. It's awesome, fantastic. They have Biker Jim's in Coors Field now.
I think they have multiple locations in Coors Field now, too.
I think they do.
They do on the third level.
I think they have
a
cart.
Yeah,
behind
the
right
cart
field,
where we went last year.
Level.
Right.
Yes.
And then, up on the third level, there is a full stand. Right.
The elk brat is my favorite thing.
Yeah, the elk brat.
To get in Coors.
Quite good.
Elk brat's real good. Real good. cream cheese. Oh yeah.
By the way, Mexican Rockies fan at doll underscore is my dad is actually in Sonora, Mexico, which is quite cool and will lead me to this. Don't get the Mexican food at Coors Field. Anywhere else in downtown Denver, the Mexican food is fantastic. Coors Field Mexican food is very bad.
It's not great.
The Blake Street Burrito Place, I remember the first time they put that in, it's like a Chipotle-style burrito place, and I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And it's like acceptable. It's like fine as a burrito.
Yeah.
But it's not like, if that was a restaurant in Denver attempting to compete with Chipotle and Illegal Pete's, and I won't put Qdoba in the conversation because Qdoba is trash, it would be the lowest tier of the fast casual burrito places. So don't worry about that.
You're a weird thing with Qdoba, man. Yeah, you got a weird thing with Qdoba.
It's so bad. And yes, the queso is better. Chipotle's queso is an abomination unto the Lord. It never should have been done. It's terrible. And Chipotle was searching for a home run because they were giving too many people Ebola or whatever they were doing, and they rolled out this queso, and it's terrible. So don't get the queso at Chipotle, in case you're wondering. But stay away from Blake Street Burrito. Not that great. My thing at Coors Field is, and I ate this every home game of the run in 2007, so it's got memories for me as well. Down the right field line, where Blue Moon Beer was invented, the Sandlot Brewery, the first microbrew to ever be housed in a brewery in the United States, or in a ballpark in the United States, there they have nachos, pulled pork nachos that are fantastic. Yeah. They're fantastic.
Real good stuff.
And that whole place has really, really good food. The Sandlot is a very underrated food option at Coors Field. I'm also a Helton Burger fan. I know people kind of knock the Helton Burger. I like the Helton Burger. It's great.
Nah, it's fine.
I think it's true.
It's fine.
What happens if opening day gets rained out from Tim Bricker? Is there a doubleheader on Saturday? No, there won't be a doubleheader on Saturday, I wouldn't think. They'll probably because, well, I mean,
well,
I, yeah, they're, actually, they're playing they are the playing the Braves.
Or the Braves.
Yeah.
Okay, so
now that I think about it, because you kind of get so accustomed to, well, they're opening up against somebody in the division. But they're not.
No, they would try to get those three games in over the weekend because they don't want to have Atlanta have to come back to Denver.
That is true. Yeah, since it's not a divisional opponent, that is definitely true. Okay. Yeah.
It seems like whenever the Braves come in, there's always some kind of snow. Whenever the Braves come in.
Yeah, that does seem to be the case.
They had that snow game, like a snow out a few years back, and then they had to go replay a game in the snow. Yeah. Like it was, yeah.
They were shoveling the field that one year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess there would be. So I would think it's probably going to be Sunday. I would think they'd go day game Sunday and night game Sunday, opposite of Sunday Night Baseball, which I know they've done before. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. I would honestly say it'd be
a split day night on Saturday?
Eastern time. So what would be Eastern time? It would be, 5 and 8 Eastern?
See, and I think they would go full. Well, I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't go full day night. Maybe they would go. Yeah, like a back-to-back kind of traditional doubleheader.
Four Eastern, 8 Eastern kind of thing, like back-to-back. Like give 20 minutes between games or whatever.
It could be.
I could see that.
That's interesting.
Not sure. All right, from Josh Conrad at Rad Josh Con. So most of the offensive woes of last year seem solved except for Trevor Story. What are the realistic options to try at short if he continues to struggle at the plate?
Pat Valaika right now. Unfortunately,
Vat Palaika.
I like Pat Valaika a lot. I think he's a real fun player. I just don't see him as a major league regular. I think Pat Valaika is a terrific utility guy to have on your bench. But right now, there is not a lot in the short term that you really have as far as options go. If Trevor Story continues to falter, Brendan Rodgers will start with Double A Hartford. He is already reported there.
Not quite ready.
And you know that's kind of what you expected for Brendan Rodgers. I think if Brendan Rodgers goes out and he blows up to start the season, I think it'll be a much quicker promotion to Albuquerque this year than it was from Lancaster to Hartford last year. That was more of a defensive thing. They were holding him in Lancaster as he continued to work on second base. This year, they're going to mix in some third base with Brendan Rodgers too, just to give him as many pathways as possible to get to the major leagues. But
and second base, yeah.
Yeah, in addition to the work from second base from last year, which he held down pretty well, there is a little ways to go with Brendan Rodgers. So he's not – I don't see him as being an option in the short term. I think there is a conceivable reality in which Brendan Rodgers blows up in April, gets promoted early to mid-May, rakes – through his time in Albuquerque, and then you see him in Denver by the end of June. I think that's possible. I don't think it's likely, but I think it's possible. But still, that leaves you in a situation where if Trevor Story continues to struggle, then you're wondering, what do we do to get this solved? Last year, Trevor Story was awful at the beginning of the season. I think the struggles were a little bit overblown in terms of his full workload for the entirety of the campaign.
You're saying the struggle was not real?
The struggle was not real. I don't think it was quite as bad. It just was so bad at the start that I don't think we really realized that, like, yeah, you know, he had some decent months. You know, I mean, June, he went out and hit 264. July, he hit 250 and he OPS'd 823. He actually got better as the season went along. His best month was September. In 28 games, he batted 262, 292, 551. He had six homers in September, 843 OPS. He was just so bad in April. He left
and
April
that's
batting
all you asked
167.
For from Trevor Story.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, if you can get Trevor Story to be a 260
hit
hitter. Exactly. Yeah. If you can get him to be a 260 to 275 hitter, that's fine. That's more than enough. But I think we're also seeing, when Trevor Story first came up, you kind of worried about, well, if he really, you know, kind of sets himself there. I mean, if he really positions himself as being a guy who could be the shortstop of the future, what happens with Brendan Rodgers? Then does he become a really, really attractive trade piece? I think Trevor Story has kind of written himself out of that conversation. Not to say that he doesn't have a future in the organization, because I think Trevor Story could be moved over to second base if DJ LeMahieu ends up going elsewhere. I think Trevor would be a terrific second baseman as well. But Trevor Story is a good major leaguer. He's not a great major leaguer. And that's fine. You don't need him to be a great major leaguer. You have a great third baseman. You have a great center fielder. You have these other guys who are carrying the load. Trevor holds down a very adequate shortstop. But if we see him continue to be the guy that he was last April, if that sticks with him into May and beyond, then I think you do start looking at your other options. Unfortunately, Brendan Rodgers won't be one of those right away.
And his defense was so much improved last year that it was worth it to keep him in the lineup, even if he was struggling at the plate.
Definitely, definitely.
All right, from Ryan Bloom at Bloomer Deluxe. This is one of the most fun ones we've ever received, I think. So his question is, would you rather walk A, in on your parents, or B, the pitcher to lead off the inning?
Definitely the pitcher to lead off the inning. Definitely. Although what's weird with me is, like, my parents have been divorced since I was 8. So it's like, they're like two strangers to me. They're like just people that met one time and, like, then we came along. Like, there was never
like
any
strangers as, like, a thing
strangers
together.
Strangers in the night. Right, exactly. Not like strangers to me. Like, I don't even know these people. No, like strangers to each other. Like, it's not really like there was ever anything there in my mind. Like, I barely remember it. So that's like, I mean, it's still horrifying. But yeah, so I would definitely go with the pitcher to lead off the inning.
Yeah, there's less emotional scarring with walking in, with walking the pitch late at the inning than it is walking in on your parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it happens more often. If it happens, like, you know, enough times where it's a real problem in your life, you walk in on your parents.
Yeah,
you know, it's at some point, it's not their problem, it's your problem. Yeah. You know, like
maybe knock a time or two.
Something, right?
You know.
I mean, yeah.
Do like, yourself just, a favor.
Or you know what? Just assume, man. Just, like, go somewhere else.
And
like, turn on the TV.
If you're of an age where you're continually walking in on your parents, man, good for your parents still going at it.
Sure.
Hell
yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Nice work.
That's the dream, right?
At @will_e_777, one of our good pals. If someone purchases it for you, will you eat one of the bull testicle po' boys this year? That's a new addition at Coors Field. I'm actually very disappointed.
Right,
Thursday afternoon, the Rockies are doing a walkthrough with members of the media where they're going to show off some renovations, stuff for the 25th anniversary season. But when they do those, they give out free food all the time. When they open the rooftop, God, what is that, 5 years ago now, 5 seasons ago now, at the start of the 2014 season, they gave out free Chubb burgers because Chubb burger had just been added.
Oh, got the best.
It was terrific. Yeah. Another good @doll_ismydad. Another good food option, by the way. Chubb burger up on the rooftop. This year, one of the additions is the Rocky Mountain Oyster Po' Boy. Hell yeah, I'd eat it. Somebody bought it for me, I'd eat it.
Yeah.
I had the Rocky Mountain Oysters when my buddy Adam came over from Taiwan 2 years ago, who was doing the 30 ballparks of Major League Baseball. for his 30th birthday, Adam just traveled around by himself for like a month and a half and went to games at all 30 ballparks, the coolest thing ever. But when Adam came here, he was like, I have to try that. And I was like, yeah, you probably do. So he bought
Honestly, the taste of it, it's fine.
It's like calamari. It's fine.
Yeah, no, the worst part of it is that you know what
exactly. You're eating. That's the problem. Like, if somebody handed it to you and said, like, oh, here, have a calamari, a piece of fried calamari,
you're like,
you think, like,
okay,
this is fine. When you think, like, no, I'm biting into a testicle, that's what really throws you off. Right. This is my other issue, though.
It tastes fine.
And I think it'll be, well, obviously it'll be different on the po' boy because that comes with its own set of compliments. But my issue is they serve it with cocktail sauce, and to me, it's not... it's not fried shrimp.
Well, no, I think that's just being a little bit too on the nose.
Yeah,
get my
oysters.
Drift.
I get it. Oh, I get it. But to me, it's a ketchup product. If you're gonna eat the Rocky Mountain Oysters, the fried Rocky Mountain Oysters, that's a ketchup product.
Honestly, a little bit of hot sauce. That's
or
a good
hot sauce. Hell yeah.
Sandwich.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
I'd be fine with that.
Yes.
Okay, let's see. We are crew. Right, we got some good ones.
From Dan Lucero, yes! Our good friend at Dan Lucero Show. If Adam Ottavino and Ian Desmond are both as good as they've looked these first four games, what would be the best place to meet for beers before and after the World Series victory parade?
The new Cherry Cricket Ballpark, which is opening up in the old Breckenridge Brewery across the street. It's not going to be open for the home opener, which is strange.
That sucks.
But that's it. And I'll be sobbing like a child. Like, if they ever win the World Series, there are two things in my life that still hold as special of a place in my heart as they did when I was a kid, and that's Nebraska football, my alma mater, and Rockies baseball. And I feel like since we've become a part of such a fun community with Rockies Twitter and with everything, like, the Rockies have meant so much to me in my life, and the Rockies have always been the thing that's been there going through terrible things in my life, that, like, if they actually won, the emotional release of the Rockies actually winning a World Series would be disgusting. Like, I'd be just like a blubbering mess.
Yes.
But that's my choice.
So that's a really good one. I'm a huge fan of the Wine Coop Brewery. I love everything they've been putting out. Obviously, I don't live in Denver anymore, so I don't have as much of a history with some of the newer stuff. Obviously, it's, you know, the place right near the ballpark. I love the Breckenridge stuff too. So there's a big brewery next door to right field. Yeah. Any of that kind of stuff was the best place for me to meet. Because, you know, it's been like, I've only been a handful of times over the last, you know, 5-6 years back to Denver for a game. So stuff that I remember back when I used to live in Denver, that's where I still hold my dearest memories.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, there's so many good places now, but I guess Lodo is somewhat insulated from, like, I'm not going to get any goddamn craft cider. I'm not going to a distillery.
I'm not
going to go to a place that I want to go to that is a place that I would drink beer and watch baseball. And so I'm not going to Rhino or any other named neighborhood that didn't exist 10 years ago.
What's Rhino?
It's the new, like, north of the ballpark now. They call it River North Rhino. Oh, you know, that used to be called, when I was a kid, the place where you go to get murdered. That's what
I was
going to
say.
Called.
Yeah. It used to be called the ghetto. Yeah.
And Dan is very much a guy who would be only up for going to, you know, good places as well, because Dan is a good human being. From Matt Hansen, our good buddy, quote, how many all-stars/all-star starters/home run derby participants will the Rockies have? And I'm going to tack on a question from Rio, one of our other best pals at Rio is Rad. Quote, after seeing the first four games, which Rocky is most likely to lose the all-star final vote?
Because that always happens every single year. Oh, boy. I'd imagine if Wade Davis has a good year, he'll be on the team based on his reputation. And if he has a good start to the season, the Rockies will most likely be doing fairly well. So he would get in no matter what, I think. Nolan and Chuck are pretty standard practice getting into the All-Star game if they have good years. So who's a guy who might pop up out of nowhere and get in the final vote? Cargo is not a bad call because of his reputation as well.
Yeah.
Desmond, of course, if he, you know, continues, he's very much got a lot of Michael Kadire in him.
Yeah.
Like, I think, yeah, you know, who's very good at losing the final vote. I'm going to go out on a limb and say Herman Marquez.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That's a limb, okay. But
I'm going to say Desmond.
Or does it have to be a hitter? I forget the final vote.
No, it doesn't have to.
Chosen by.
It doesn't have to. It could be a pitcher.
Okay.
Okay, that's interesting. I think it could be a pitcher anyway.
I'm trying to think now. It might. If it's a hitter, I'll go with Cargo.
Okay.
But if it's a pitcher, I'll save Marquez.
I'm going to go with Desmond. I feel like Desmond, he's going to have a solid first half, and everybody's going to be like, hey, look at Ian Desmond. He was so terrible last year. Now he's back. He's going to be in the final vote, and then he's going to get like 4% of the final vote. It's going to be like Eric Hosmer gets in hitting 30 points lower, but the Padres needed another representative. It's going to be something like that. This is a good one, a really good one, from Adam, who's I don't know if Adam's actual last name is Busback, but if it is, terrific last name.
Pretty sweet last name.
And he says, quote, which player on the 25-man roster would make the best home-cooked meal?
Oh boy. I mean, I gotta say Parra.
Yeah.
Only because we've seen him on his Instagram. Like, he makes some good meat. And you know he's gonna be a party if Parra's hosting it.
Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely true. My initial inclination is to go with one of the Latin American players because that food is incredible. Like, Dominican food, if you've never had Dominican food, it's fantastic. It's just like a lot of good meats and rice and beans and plantains everywhere. Gerardo Parra, Venezuelan food. I've only been to like two Venezuelan restaurants in my life, but they were terrific. Actually, one of the best meals I've ever had was at a Colombian restaurant in Paris, of all places. But like, that area of the world produces some very good food and very good food stylings that I don't think I eat nearly enough. But I'm going to give you this guy who, God, is also the same age as me. What is happening? Mike Dunn has the beard/goatee of a guy who knows how to run a barbecue grill.
Yeah.
He looks like that dude. Like, true. Mike Dunn looks like the type of guy that you would go over to his house, he would have 75 steaks for a gathering of 14 people for some reason, and they would just be the most mouthwateringly delicious, fat Omaha steaks that you could ever eat in your entire life. I feel like Mike Dunn would be an underrated good home cook.
I could see it. Okay. I could see that one. Yeah, okay. That's pretty good.
Okay, good.
That was a good run of PDP.
Yeah.
PDP guys.
Yeah.
Well done. Yeah.
We had one other one at Matt Patston, who checks in. I don't know if I think we've heard from Matt before on an Ask PDP, but he said, what does Mike Togman's long-term future with the Rockies look like? I think it's really difficult to nail down right now because I don't know if the Rockies – I think the Rockies have to figure out their top four outfielders before there's really a clear picture on who fills in behind them. I think they really like Mike Togman a lot, but it depends on, you know, is David Dahl going to assert himself as a starter? If he does, who does that push out of your starting alignment right now with the Rockies? More than likely, that's Gerardo Parra. Then he becomes your number four. Then what does that mean for Raimel Tapia, who's in AAA, who you've been in love with for a long time as an organization? What does it mean for somebody like Mike Togman? So I think that picture has to get sorted out before you really have a handle on what it means for guys like Speedy Legs. But we love Speedy Legs.
The Speedy Leg Boy.
The Speedy Leg
Boy. As Rocky versus Connor puts him. But no, he's got a great minor league profile. He's hit about .290 in every single stop at the minor league level. An OBP about .350 or better. You know, it's just a matter of getting opportunities. Some of those numbers were inflated by the league that he played in. I mean, last year with Albuquerque in the PCL, he hit .331 with 16 homers and 80 runs batted in 110 games. Number's going to be inflated there in the PCL, of course. But, you know, the fact that he was given the option to be on the major league roster to begin the season, I think that's a pretty big sign. And it could be just because he's the one guy that they don't mind if he doesn't get consistent at bats in AAA. Like, they want to see David Dahl play every day to see that he can handle the workload again. They want to see Raimel Tapia get consistent at bats because that's just what they want to see from Tapia. You know, if he's maybe the guy who just want to be around the big league club, I'm sure that's okay with him because he's just there now in the big leagues, and that's always something he's going to be able to tell his kids and his family for the rest of his life.
Pretty awesome.
But I really do think that, like, it's a fourth or fifth outfielder is probably about what he projects to, and, you know, can some sneaky pop to the gaps and, you know, play some defense.
Yeah.
That's, you know, no one, not everybody has to be a superstar.
You can carve out a living like that. That's a hell of a way to live.
Yep.
It's a good thing to have. And guys like Mike Togman are valuable, vital pieces of an organization. Beyond Ask PDP, we're going to get to one more thing before we get on out of here, and that is where some of the top prospects in the Rockies organization are headed as full-season minor league rosters have been announced, and minor league baseball will open up its season coming up this Thursday, April 5th. We'll start from the top and go on down, and this is from our good buddies at purpleroad.com. Some of the prospects that they highlighted, Adam Peterson wrote up a little recap of what these rosters look like going into the year. The Albuquerque Isotopes, a AAA, will have starting pitchers Yency Almonte and Sam Howard to go along with Harrison Musgrave, as well as position players Tom Murphy, the catching prospect Jordan Patterson, who's a guy who's, you know, kind of fallen out of the conversation but still contains some promise, a first baseman slash corner outfielder. Relievers, Jairo Diaz, Jerry Vasto, who's a really interesting story, a guy who kind of came out of nowhere for the Rockies, an undrafted player. Jerry Vasto was a drafted player, just came out of a very, very small school, as I recall, Felician College, and was a 24th round pick back in 2014. So those are some of the guys there, in addition to, of course, David Dalenrymel Tapia. Double A Hartford, the Yard Goats yesterday posted a picture of Brendan Rodgers already there and playing ping pong at the ballpark. So Rodgers is there. Peter Lambert, the right-handed pitching prospect, and again, as at Rockies versus Connor has let us all know for so many years, three toddlers stacked in a trench coat. Ryan Castellani, another starting pitching prospect, and then some really interesting position players there as well. Garrett Hampson, Anthony's boy. Brian Mundell, a first baseman, kind of a slugging DH type of profile in the minor leagues, but a guy who holds down first base fine. Sam Hilliard, an outfielder, Jonathan Daza, an outfielder, and Dom Nunez, a catching prospect. Some of the shine has worn off of Dom, but keep in mind with Dom Nunez, extremely young last year when he was at AA Hartford, and got a little bit better as the season went along offensively. He's just got to learn how to hit advanced pitching. Class A advanced, Lancaster, Forrest Wall goes back there while repeating the level because he was injured last year, separated his shoulder trying to make a dive for a catch, but is healthy and looks good. He's going to see some more time in the outfield in addition to second base. Colton Welker, third base prospect, fellow third base, but now also first base prospect, Tyler Nevin. Willie Abreu, my boy, who is one of the funnest baseball players you will ever see. And if you're a recent joiner of the PDP and Rockies Twitter, just Google Willie Abreu Miami bat flip because he went to the University of Miami and unleashed some of the most incredible bat flips in human history. And that team, what's interesting, not a lot of pitching talent on that team. And to be playing in by far the most hitter-friendly ballpark in the minor leagues and not have, like, any ranked prospects on that roster is going to be very interesting for the pitching staff.
Yep.
And the Asheville Tourists, Class A full season, the lowest full season affiliate. Riley Pint heads back there. Pint, the right-handed pitching prospect. I think this is a very key year in his development. He heads back there. Ryan, I still don't know how to say Ryan's last name. Valade, Ryan Valade. It could be Velotti, but I will be perfectly honest with you and don't know. But Ryan,
we should probably ask some people about that. Yeah,
Ryan was the second round pick for the Rocks last year out of Stillwater High School in Oklahoma. He'll be in Asheville. Robert Tyler will be in Asheville. Ben Bowden will be in Asheville. Will Gaddis, some interesting relief prospects for the Rockies. They'll be in Asheville. So those are the big names. What really stands out to me is the depth of AAA, because we talk so much about that and what it means for the Major League team. You've got Yency Almonte there. You've got Sam Howard there. You've got Harrison Musgrave there. Jeff Hoffman, I would assume when he gets healthy, is probably headed back to Albuquerque as well. So you have pieces in Albuquerque that you feel confident in that are not major league ready just yet, but if your starting rotation holds out and then you need somebody in June to make a spot start, I think you feel really good about the fact that you've got some really talented top prospect types of guys in AAA.
Yeah. I mean, there's talent at every single level here for the Rockies, and a lot of it is getting to be close enough to the big leagues that they can make it an impact very, very soon.
I like it. I agree.
Yeah.
I just saw a Bobby DeMuro tweet. Remember Bobby?
No, I don't.
I just,
Bobby's been dead for 10 years.
Bobby disappeared. Just disappeared. Bobby DeMuro. But anyway, welcome back, Bobby. I'm sure he doesn't listen to the show anymore, but if he does, welcome back. Your, my, and our Colorado Rockies return home coming up on Friday for opening day against the Atlanta Braves. Atlanta, a team that is loaded with talent in its minor league system, and I don't really know what to expect from the Braves at the major league level this year. I just don't.
No, I mean, I don't think anybody really does.
Ronald Acuña, I mean, once he gets up, he's going to be good, but that's like all you know about the Braves.
Yeah, they'll get Acuña up eventually. You know, if Dansby Swanson and Ozzy Albies can form a nice keystone combo there in the middle, they're still very young. Beyond that, you know, yeah, they're definitely playing in the major leagues.
Yeah, or at least trying to.
Yeah.
Two 10 Mountain Time is the start time for Friday, weather contingent. Coming up on Saturday, a 6:10 game, and then a 1:10 game in the afternoon on Sunday, and then the Friar in town, San Diego Padres, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. And then the Rockies are on the road for 7 games, including a very early season trip to Washington. The 3rd road series of the year for the Rockies and the 1st out of the division will be at the Washington Nationals for 4 games from Thursday through Sunday, but we will talk to you before then, quite obviously. And then the weekend, if you want to leave town, and thank God I will be out of town, the Chicago Cubs come to town Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yep, hard pass,
through the 22nd. So if you would like to just immerse yourself in the worst of Denver, like everything that you hate about Denver and what it's become over the last 10 years, hit up those games with the Cubs in town for 3 nights. Get excited. 2 nights and an afternoon, I guess. God, and then the Padres again? Oh, the unbalanced schedule, man. It's so gross. You ever see the Padres 6 times? They're going to play the Padres 10 times in the month of April.
Yeah, this is the first or the only series or like the first series at San Diego until, I think, September.
How weird.
Right?
What a strange start to the season.
Yeah, the next time they go to San Diego is September, or August 30th.
The quirks in the Major League scheduling setup are, they're always just fun to nitpick because it's like trying to split the atom. Like, setting a 162-game schedule for 30 teams is so intricate and complicated.
Sorry, there's a 2-game series May 14th and 15th. Sorry.
How weird. But it's still like, even despite the fact that it's like the most complicated, difficult task on the planet, it's like, man, this schedule is dumb. I could have done it better. No way in hell that I couldn't do anything.
I could never even
attempt to do a schedule. It's impossible. All right, so I guess that'll do it for this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. But some news for the show. Sorry, I just had to make it as dramatic as possible.
Go on.
Coming up tomorrow, if you are tuned into this on Thursday, I can't imagine many of you are going to listen. I don't know. You people listen pretty quickly. Up on Friday, the 2018 Purple Dinosaur Podcast t-shirt will be released.
Woo!
So get excited.
Yeah.
Get excited. Woo! I'm excited about this one. We've talked about it on and off for a while.
I like it.
And I think it's going to be a good one. I don't know if anything is ever going to hit the same level as Party Deck Against the World. Like, I feel like
that one caught at the right time.
We snatched onto the fire with that one. We might just have to re-release that one in like an alternate version.
Well, I mean, it's still there.
It is still there. And you can get yours at purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. We got a lot of good stuff coming up on Friday. And I guess that'll do it. This week's edition of the PDP.
Yeah.
We'll be back with you next week when the Colorado Rockies will undoubtedly be, by then, like 11-2, we'll say.
Yep.
Works for me.
I think so.
11 straight. Why not? Let's make it out.
I like it.
Cool. He's Anthony Masterson. I'm Tyler Mon. See you next week. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Cool.
All right.
Dog.
All right.
I will.
Well.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool.
All right. Okay. What?
Later.
You said me.
You hang up.
No. You hang up.